Morning, everybody. Thanks for coming out at 8:30. I know that can be tough during conferences. Appreciate it. My name is Robert Green. I'm a technical evangelist at Microsoft in the Developer and Platform Evangelism Group, also known as DPE. And my focus is Visual Studio and particularly Windows 8 development. So I've spent a fair amount of time over the past almost a year now working with Visual Studio and Windows 8 and thinking about building line of business apps, which is my background. I've been doing that since I got into this business, and so the opportunity to do it on Windows 8 was very exciting. And so that's what my talk today is going to be about, building Windows 8 apps for the enterprise. Here's my email address, rogreen@microsoft.com. If you have any questions on any of this stuff, feel free to email me. I love talking to people, happy to either answer the question or go get the answer to the question, and that way we both learn. So don't hesitate. So by now, you've heard the story on Windows 8. You went to the keynote yesterday, Antoine's keynote. You saw this. Hopefully you've seen a lot of that. You know that Windows 8 is reimagined. It's reimagined for the world we live in, which is the world of connected, of being connected all the time. Multiple devices. We have our phones, we have our tablet or slate-like devices. We have a world where we're constantly connected. If I want to check email, I pick up my phone, I press the on button, and I can see that I have 4 emails waiting for me. Swipe up, tap Outlook, and I can scan the email, and I can do this in seconds. This kind of revolutionizes this ubiquitous, easy-to-use, always-on devices. Really, if you think about it, revolutionizes the workflow. I love to tell the story that before I got my smartphone, I never checked email at home because it was too much of a hassle. Go upstairs, turn on the computer, wait for it to turn on, log in, wait for the computer to find the network, double-click on Outlook, wait for that to start up, just to see that I don't have any mail that requires me to do anything right now, shut down the computer, go all the way downstairs. I never did that. Now, I'm constantly checking email. I wake up in the morning, I just turn this on to see what's going on, not because I'm insane, not because I have no work-life balance, not because I'm addicted to email, although my wife would disagree with all 3 of those statements. But you know what I'm talking about. It's so easy to do, why wouldn't you just do it? So the phone operating system is built for that kind of world, and now Windows is built for that kind of world. And the cool thing about Windows 8 is that it is not a device operating system. It is an operating system that runs on all computers that can run Windows 7, which means the big desktop, big fat laptops, smaller laptops, tablets, and eventually on down the line. So it is an operating system that works on all of these devices. So is this a phone? No, it's not a phone. It's a computer that can make phone calls if you're into that kind of thing. But it's really a portable computer. This machine here that I'm running on is a Lenovo X220, which turns out to make a great Windows 8 laptop because it's touch-enabled. It's got a nice keyboard, nice big hard drive, lots of memory. The screen actually tilts, and I can use it as the world's heaviest tablet, which I occasionally do. But I also have a Samsung Slate, which makes a better tablet. So this is the world that we as developers are in, and this is the world that we as developers are going to be writing apps for. So we think of 4 types of Metro-style apps divided into 2 categories depending on who's using them. The first and the most familiar are the apps that are used by consumers. Built by a tech company, could be a large tech company, could be 2 guys in a garage, could be somebody working weekends and evenings. We do things like Angry Birds and Facebook and Pandora and Twitter, etc. And the way you get these will always be through the store. I guess it's possible that you would write an app and give it to your friends, but if you've written the app and it's that usable, in all likelihood you're going to put it in the store, maybe make a little money off it. Could be a free app. Maybe you charge a few bucks for it and hope to make some money. So that's the familiar thing. Another category of the consumer apps are what we'll call business-to-consumer apps. Home Depot, British Airways, the Amazon Kindle. I've got and on my phone, a Delta app that lets me check my flights and sign in. So things that a business will use to aid their customers. And of course, the reason they're aiding their customers is because their customers give them money. So it's a wonderful relationship, right? These will typically be, if not built by the enterprise, then built by somebody that the enterprise contracts out to, but we'll call these enterprise apps. And the distribution, again, is going to be the store. Amazon Kindle, the Home Depot app, British Airways, etc. Those guys are going to want to put the app in the store because they're going to want to service their customers, and they're also going to want to get new customers. Okay, so this is pretty straightforward. We understand this. There are a lot of these types of apps, and you know, when you read in the press about how many apps are in the App Store, this is primarily the types of apps that people are talking about. But there's another category of apps that people in business will consume. And we'll start first with line of business ISV apps. So these are basically apps that your ISV will provide to you to be worked internally. So for example, SAP would work on a Metro-style app to act as a front end to data that sits in SAP. This could be just a simple dashboard. It could be something that enables you to actually do things. Citrix Receiver is another good example. We've talked to them about building a Metro-style app. You know, people use Receiver to, you know, log into their desktops and do virtualization. They would certainly be interested in having a Metro front end or a Windows 8 app front end to that. And there's a good chance that they would put it in the store. Why would they put it in the store? Because it's the easiest way to distribute that. Now, what would they do? They may put that app in the store, and they may just say, you know what? We want as many people to be able to use this app as possible, and we understand that the app is useless to you if you're not a customer of ours, so maybe we'll just put it in the store for free, let anybody download it. If you don't have an account with Citrix, the app's useless to you, but it's good advertising. And if you do have an account with them, then you'll have to enter some credentials, of course, and then you can use the app. That's perfectly reasonable. If they don't want to put it in the store, then they can deploy it through a process called sideloading. I talked about that in detail in my talk yesterday, and we'll review it a little bit today on the two ways you can deploy apps, whether it's through the store or sideloading. So these ISV apps are a category, and then the one that we'll focus on most in this talk are custom line of business apps. So the things that we as internal developers would build, expense approval apps, order placement, something that helps us know do customer support, or the type of app where the field guys are running an app that reads down the data about the appointments they need to go to, and then they go off to their appointments. So these are going to be built in the enterprise. I guess it's possible you could make these available through the store, but these apps are internal, probably proprietary, certainly working with proprietary data, and not likely the thing that you would put in the store. So those apps are definitely going to be sideloaded. So some examples of Windows 8 line of business apps: point of sale systems, product catalogs, workflow management, dashboards, monitoring and action field apps. So a couple examples. In the keynote yesterday, they showed Rooms to Go, which I know local folks are familiar with. We don't have it in the Pacific Northwest, so I didn't know about them until I first heard about them. But they are I call them the Home Depot of furniture stores, if you will. It's kind of a big box furniture store. You go in, you know, they have just a ton of furniture, very reasonably priced. You go in and the sales reps will come to you with a tablet machine that has their product catalog. So you can search the catalog, you can see what's in stock, you can put apps put rooms together. They can take furniture and drag it around on the screen to help you lay out your room and then place the order, and you know, a couple weeks later, whatever, the furniture arrives. That app is currently running on Windows 7 as a Silverlight app, and it works well. It doesn't work as great as it will work on Windows 8 because, you know, Windows 7 supports touch, but Windows 8 has touch built in. So the touch capabilities and the animation capabilities in Windows 8 surpass what's in Windows 7. So they're interested in porting or moving this app over to Windows 8. It'll talk to the exact same data on the back end. Because it's already a Silverlight app, they can reuse a large amount of the XAML and certainly the C# code that talks to the services and makes things happen. So it's certainly not a start from scratch. And that makes a great example of a line of business app. I'm going to show you a couple examples of expense reporting apps. I think those are also great examples of Windows 8 apps because they're going to wind up being easy to use, taking advantage of the fast and fluid, touch-centric nature of Windows 8. So why would you build a Windows 8 app? When would you build a Windows 8 app? When would you move an app over to Windows 8? You know, every time we have a new technology or a new platform, there always is the question, when would I use it and should I move my existing apps over? And the answer to that is you should use a certain technology or jump on a platform when the benefit of doing so outweighs the cost of doing so. Right? There's clearly cost to moving over to Metro. There's things to Windows 8. There are things to learn. There are new coding techniques. Certainly a lot of what you know moves over, but there's new stuff to learn. So is it worth the cost? What are some of the things you can expect? So one of the big benefits is mobility. If you have a world where people want to use your apps in multiple settings on multiple devices, then Windows 8 is a perfect example. So again, rooms to go. There will be people in the back room working on larger desktop computers looking at this product catalog, but there are also people out on the sales floor, and then they send people, if they have consultants and design consultants that go to people's homes, these people would also be wanting to use the exact same data and the exact same app on a range of computers. Windows 8 is a great mobile operating system. The apps are designed to be performant. They're designed not to hog the resources on the computer, so you get great battery life. You would move something over to or start something as a Windows 8 app if you were expecting increased productivity. Because it's touch first, because of the Metro design guidelines, which give us the fast and fluid experience, I will maintain that many, many types of apps will wind up being more productive. And I'll demonstrate that with an expense reporting app that I'll show in a little bit that I think, and not just because I wrote it, but I think is more productive and easier to use than what it replaces. Because we have touch first, we have the live tiles, notifications, the contracts, the Windows 8 specific capabilities make apps that are more productive. If you think about an app, its goal is to do something, and if you can do it better, then that's good for the business. There's a benefit to that. Metro-style apps, Windows 8 apps are performant, quick startup, designed to be asynchronous. Windows 8 is all about asynchronicity. The general rule is if anything takes more than 50 milliseconds, you should make it asynchronous, and you'll see as you're programming in the WinRT that a lot of the calls are just flat out asynchronous. So if you want to read a file off the hard drive, use the file picker and get a file off the hard drive, that is an async operation. You can force it to be synchronous, but the default is that it's asynchronous. Windows 8 apps run in a container, so we have an application container ship model. They're isolated. The apps can't talk to each other. They can't hog the resources of the computer. They can't. I'm not going to stand up here and say that nothing can do damage, but these apps were designed to have security, designed to have apps run in isolation and just be well behaved. The use what you know is an important part because, as it turns out, you can build Windows 8 apps using XAML, VB, C#, and now also C++. You can build them using JavaScript, HTML, and CSS. So if you already know those, then you know what you need to know to come get started building Windows 8 apps. The Rooms to Go guys found this out. I found this out as building app. When I'm building apps, the expense report application that I'll show later on is a XAML app written in C# because that's what I know. I know some JavaScript, HTML, and CSS, but I'm really more of a XAML C# guy. And so the app feels like building a XAML app with C#. It is certainly not a case of throwing out everything you know and starting from scratch. And then the final benefit is the easy deployment. Nothing easier than deploying an app by putting it in the store, And also, if you do the side loading, you have the ability to push apps out to people, sort of the same way you can do today. So you push out not only the application itself, but updates to the application. If you're running on x86, if you're running on the ARM devices, you don't necessarily have the ability to push apps out, but you can make them available to people. Okay. So that's Windows 8 apps. When would you not build a Windows 8 app? What about desktop apps? What about web apps? There are certainly some desktop apps that would not necessarily benefit from being moved over to Windows 8. So an app where you need pixel accuracy, so like a CAD CAM app, would probably be best written, would likely and possibly be best written, continue to be written as a desktop app. An app where you need Chrome, like Visual Studio or Word or PowerPoint. Now, there's no doubt that the Office team is working on Metro versions of Word and PowerPoint, but what exactly does it mean to be Metro? Because one of the design guidelines of Metro is content over Chrome. If you think about PowerPoint and Word, they are all about the Chrome, right? You fire up PowerPoint, you have an empty container. You have a design surface. Same thing with Word. You type in Word, but then unless you're just, I mean, you might as well, all it is the words, then you could just do it in Notepad. But you enter Word, there's formatting, there's creating tables, there's all kinds of things that you do to turn those words into a document, or in PowerPoint, to turn text into a presentation. It's all about the Chrome. What does that look like as a Metro-style app? I'm fascinated to find out. Not 100% sure I want to be on the cutting edge of figuring it out myself, though. So if you have an app that requires huge amounts of data entry or an app that you really need to provide lots of data and you need pinpoint accuracy or you can click on something that's this big and drag it around, that is not necessarily going to make a great Metro-style app. So for example, try clicking on the space inside an O. It's pretty easy to do with the mouse. Try tapping at it with your finger. I have small hands, but I don't think I could do it. So something like that, if that's your app, probably best to just leave it as a desktop app, continue working on it. It'll run great in Windows 8. Background tasks probably should be desktop apps, continue to be desktop apps as well. Because Windows 8 is not necessarily designed for apps that are constantly running. There are some that can do that, like the media players, the radio apps, etc. But in general, they're designed to be able to be suspended when you're not using them to free up resources. So if you need something that's constantly pulling a stock price and every 15 seconds blasting out an update, that's probably not a good choice for a Windows 8 app. As far as web apps, if you don't need the platform richness, the specific features in Windows 8, if you want this to be accessible across various platforms, you want a zero footprint, then you'd continue to build web apps. You, of course, might do both, right? So Amazon, for example, or Bing would not only have a web app, but they would also potentially want a Metro app as well as apps that run on other platforms. So maybe you'll do both, but I don't know that I would necessarily replace the web app with the Metro app in that case. Okay, so I'm certainly not going to stand up here and say you should always move over. You really need to think about it. Get a good understanding of what the platform offers, and then make the decision. Okay, so we talked about apps being in the store. So let's go take a quick look at business apps in the store. I'm going to launch the store, and if I scroll over, come on. Oh, that's weird. Touch isn't working, but only the mouse is. Okay. Happily, Windows 8 supports both. Okay, so all the way over, sort of over to the right, is the business category. Right now, there's a handful of business apps here, but this is a category that we expect people writing business-to-consumer apps, not necessarily business to business, but certainly business to consumer apps would put their apps in here. So There's this app called MyStar Job, for example, which I actually installed yesterday, so I currently own it, which gives me the ability to search for jobs. I believe it's in India. There's also this Captain Dash app, which enables me to integrate my data from Google Analytics and Twitter to a single platform and produce on-demand interactive dashboards. So that's a great example of a business app that you might find in the store. So these guys, if you are using these back-end systems and you have an account, then this app is completely useful to you. If you're not using those, then okay, fine, the app's not useful, but now I know about it. So I think this is a great example of why you would put a business app in the store. I now know about this app, and if I have a need for this type of thing, I know exactly where to go. Okay. So right now, there's just a handful of business apps. Obviously, we'll expect a lot more over time. Okay, so if you're going to build a Windows 8 business app, then you really owe it to yourself and to your users to get nice and familiar with the user experience, particularly the Metro style design. It's relatively easy to make an app that looks kind of Metro. It's quite a bit harder to make an app that actually follows the principles and actually is a Metro app. We'll discuss that a little bit when we get to the actual expense report app. But I would highly recommend that you learn the user experience, learn the principles, and follow them to the best of your capabilities, because people will get used to how Metro-style apps behave, and then they'll will expect your app to behave the same way as well. And once they learn how Metro-style apps behave, then it'll make it easier for them to learn how to use your app. If you make an app that looks like the others but behaves differently, then your app is harder to use and harder to learn. Okay. So what about support for PCs? What about support for peripherals? I did mention that Windows 8 runs across a number of devices. And this is, you know, a great point to make in comparison to the competition, but it's also a great thing to keep in mind when we're building Windows 8 apps, because a Windows 8 app will run on desktops, laptops, tablets. You know, in my office back at Microsoft, I have a nice big Hewlett-Packard desktop that was invented long before Windows 8 came about. It works fine as a Windows 8 machine, except when I touch the screen, nothing happens except I leave fingerprints on it. And I have to constantly remind myself that it's not a touch monitor. I was doing that in the Windows. I did some booth duty in the Windows booth as well. They had a Samsung slate, and then they had a giant monitor. I kept touching the monitor, and nothing happened, of course, because it's not touch capable. So Windows 8 runs on all of these devices, which means when you're building an app, you can build it for a scenario where somebody starts working, could be on an expense report, could be looking at data, doing a PKI type of thing on their desktop, packs up on the train home, is doing the exact same thing on their Slate device, gets home, goes into the den or upstairs, turns on their home computer, can be running the same app, then in the morning continues working on it on the tablet, gets to work, switches over to the desktop machine. You can do that by persisting the data locally if it's sensitive data. You can also do that by storing the data in the cloud if it's the type of data that you're comfortable putting in the cloud, because you can roam. Okay. In terms of peripherals, obviously support for printers and cameras, routers, USB. We'll have support for things like barcode readers, near-field communication. Our goal is to have great support for all these things by general availability. Okay, I just got a couple more slides and then we'll move over into demo. So I don't want you to think that this talk is all slides. In terms of authentication and security, there are a number of choices of ways you can do these. We have integrated Windows authentication, so all you need to do is declare a couple capabilities. Enterprise authentication gives you the ability to pass credentials onto other applications, and there's a private network capability which gives you the ability to talk to servers. So for example, in my expense report application, I'm talking to a couple services. One is a WCF service that talks to the database where the expenses are stored. Another one is an internal service that is using Active Directory, and that's how I can get the app to look up who my manager is. In order to use those, I need the ability to pass my credentials, because the app that uses Active Directory needs to believe who I am. And I also need the ability to talk to services running on other boxes in the enterprise. So all I need to do is turn on those two capabilities. We have the ability to work with certificates. So there's a windows.security.cryptography.certificates class that you can use. We have the ability to do multi-factor authentication. We have a credential picker and also the ability to have shared user certificates. You can use Web Authentication Broker to do a federated ADFS authentication, and you can also use it to do single sign-on. So for example, if you want to integrate with Windows Live or Facebook or other things and not have the user have to sign in repeatedly, then you can use the Web Authentication Broker and this method called Authenticate Async and pass the credentials back and forth. We talked in terms of security about the isolated app containers. The capabilities provide security as well. We have support for SSL and TLS. Obviously, cryptography is inside the Windows runtime. And then, of course, we have the ability to sign apps and the requirement that you sign apps. In order to get an app from the store, it has to be signed. And the process of sending an app up to the store after we run the certification and verify the application, we'll sign it for you, and that certificate is trusted automatically by Windows. And then, of course, internally, you sign apps and have those apps trusted, that certificate trusted, and unless the app is trusted, you can't run it on Windows 8. Okay? All right. So in terms of working with data, we of course can talk to data through services. You know, if you've built Silverlight apps or you're building web apps, you're likely, yes, you know that in a web app you can talk directly to the database, and we know that in a Silverlight app you can't talk directly to the database, so we're calling services. So it's the same world. Windows 8 apps can absolutely talk to services, ASNX services, WCF services, living out on the network or out on the web. There's also some support for local storage. So in a HTML JavaScript app, you can use IndexedDB. In a XAML app, we don't at the moment have support for SQL CE or any SQL Server variant, but there is SQLite, which will work with XAML apps. I don't know if you go to Tim Heuer's blog, he's got a little bit about that. We'll expect increased support for that and some classes that make it easier for the C# and VB guys to use SQLite, but that will definitely be a possibility. You can, of course, work with data on local files and network shares. Again, your back-end systems if you declare the capabilities. We've done a fair amount of work on showing how to work with data in Windows Azure, whether it's table storage or it uses SQL. So there's a variety of ways that you can get to data. In terms of synchronization, you can use roaming storage, so this idea that you can store data in the cloud for the user is something to certainly investigate, again, depending on the type of data. If you have sensitive data that doesn't get to leave the premises, then you're not going to go that route. But if you have data that is, if it can be trusted enough to be stored in the user in the cloud or stored in the user's SkyDrive, in that case, then you can take advantage of the ability for the Windows 8 app to connect up to the cloud or connect up to SkyDrive and move that data around. So we know that it works for things like ebooks or movies. If I start watching a movie at work and then I get on the bus and I pull up that movie on my tablet, because where I was is stored in the cloud, I can read that down and jump to where and pick up that movie where I left off, go home and continue watching it. We certainly trust where I was in a movie in the cloud. Will we trust corporate data? Maybe, maybe not. Kind of depends on what it is, right? If someone's entering notes into working on a document or working on, you know, the Rooms to Go catalog, you know, how sensitive is the information that's in the catalog that's then going to be mailed to customers? Maybe we're okay moving that data up into the cloud so that the user can continue working on it from multiple locations. Maybe the thought of moving data into the cloud is a fireable offense, so maybe in that case we wouldn't do it. Kind of depends. It's a capability that could be used. And then if you're storing information locally, you can do database synchronization. It's probably going to be more of a manual process at the moment, but you can synchronize data from the databases locally. Okay, so let's actually skip ahead to working with some code, and then we'll come back to that. So what I want to do is, let's decide where to start. So how many people here have actually played around with building a Windows 8 app in Visual Studio? Okay, how many people have not? Okay. About 75% said they hadn't, so I'm going to do a brief overview of how you get started building an app, and then I'll show a couple versions of the expense report apps, and we'll look at a couple other things as well. So I've got Visual Studio Ultimate 2012 release candidate running, and to build a Windows 8 app, all I need to do is go to File, New Project, and then for JavaScript, I have a category called Windows Metro Style. I also have the same thing under Visual Basic, under C Sharp, and under C++. Okay. So how many people in here are XAML developers? And how many people are JavaScript HTML developers? It's a little bit more XAML than JavaScript, and a bunch of people didn't raise their hands, so I'll assume that's other. Or we're happy to see whatever you want to show us. Okay, so when I go to C Sharp and select Windows Metro Style, I have a bunch of project templates. The first one is Blank App. That will give me, obviously, an application with a single XAML page that has nothing on it. That might be a good place to start. I also have another couple of options. The Grid app is going to build a multi-page project for navigating. This is essentially what we call the hub spoke details model of navigation. This top page will list items in the groups organized in a horizontal fashion. And what it will basically do is it will wind up looking like a lot of these newsreader applications. So for example, if I go into the MSNBC app, I see items in a horizontal grid organized by category, top headlines, today, US news, and then I can pick one of these and then go in and look at that story. Okay, so that's a kind of a classic navigation model. The front is the hub where I see the groups and the items. Then there's a group page where I can see information on the group and the items in the group. And then there's a page for looking at details. So the hub, the spoke, and the details. A variant is the split app, which is a two-page project. The first page will be the hub. It will show me the groups and the items, and then a page that for each group shows me the items on the left, a list of the items on the left, and then the details on the right. So I can choose whether to have the hub, the spoke, and the details, or basically go right from the hub into a combination of the spoken details. So let's build a grid app. Let's click OK. And when we come in, I have three XAML files here, one for grouped items, one for group detail, one for item detail. In my data model, I have some sample data. And if I press F5, The app runs, and I have now built my first Windows 8 app that adheres completely to the Metro style guidelines. This looks like a Windows 8 app. It acts like a Windows 8 app. I have my title here. I have groups. I have my items. I can scroll back and forth. If I want to look at an item, I just tap on it or click on it. Here's that information. I actually have a control here where I can either scroll with my finger from app to app, or I can take advantage of clicking on these arrows to move backwards and forwards. I have a back button here to move backwards. If I click on a group title, then I go to that group items page, or the group details page, excuse me, where I see information on the group and then each of the items, and I can drill down into that item. Okay, so this app follows the Metro style guidelines because that project template was built to do so. And this is a very, very cool thing. We thank our good friends in the Visual Studio team for doing that, because in the past, you know, you fire up a new Silverlight app or WPF app or a Windows Forms app, you don't get design guidance, you get a blank canvas upon which you can utilize your immense design skills or your shocking or expected lack of design skills or anything in between. When we decided for Metro style apps that we should give you some help this time around, and we do. And so this template builds an app that looks exactly like a Metro style app. And at this point, if I wanted to build something like the news reader, maybe it was a catalog application, or it was an app that showed, you know, who's in various groups and what their title is. I've got their pictures and their title, and I'm going to organize them by department. All I really need to do is go into this sample data source file, which is organized. I have this sample data common class, which has an ID, a title, subtitle, description, and an image. And then there's the sample data item, which inherits from that and just adds content and group. Let's bump up the font a little bit. So my sample data item class, title, subtitle, description, image. That's my basic class. Then sample data item inherits from that and adds content and the group. And then I have a sample data group class, which is just observable collection of the sample data items. And then I have my sample data source, which is, you know, the collections of the groups. And then I've got fake data. So all I would really need to do is go get real pictures, real descriptions, real titles, organize the groups by department, swap out the fake data for the real data, whether it's hard-coded or I'm reading from a service somewhere, from a database, and I could turn this application into an actual reader application in about, I don't know what, 15, 20 minutes or something. And it supports the touch, it supports the scrolling, it looks and feels like a Metro-style app. Now I can do the same thing in JavaScript. So let's create a grid app in JavaScript. Press F5 to run it. What do you know? It looks exactly like the other one. Which one was the XAML app? Which one was the JavaScript app? It's kind of hard to tell. And we did that on purpose. Certainly, if you build a Silverlight app that runs in the browser, you can tell that it's not the same thing as an ASP.NET app that runs in the browser. They look differently. They can behave differently. You can make them behave similarly, but they're clearly different apps. We decided in building Windows 8 that we didn't want to have that separation anymore between an app written in XAML or an app written in HTML and JavaScript. So for the most part, and by most, it's dramatically most, you can build, they're exactly the same. Certainly this template looks exactly the same. There are some instances where there are some controls in the JavaScript side that aren't in the XAML side yet. So you know, if you are familiar enough with some of the differences in the controls and the difference between the controls and a little bit about how they behave, you would, to the trained eye, be able to tell the difference. But for the most part, your users won't. And I think this is a great thing because the decision on whether to go XAML or JavaScript is not going to be based on how the app looks and feels. It's going to be based on what you know. Now, if you need a control that is only in one or the other, and that's critical to the application, well, of course, that can sway the decision. But it's going to be based more on your coding skills and less on what the platforms support. And of course, the goal over time is to have equal support for everything. Okay. So, given that, let's look at how we could build a line of business app. And I'm actually going to do something similar to what Antoine did in the keynote yesterday. Who saw yesterday's keynote? Okay, most people. But a bunch didn't. So let me just review this quickly. This will just take a few minutes to basically show you what he showed. And we'll just review that, and then we'll look at another example. Okay, so here's an expense report app. This is the one he showed. This one is geared more towards approvals. So let me show, actually I'll show the finished version, and then I'll show how we get there. Okay, so the app comes up and it shows me expenses that have been submitted. They're grouped by whether or not they're late or on time or in progress. And I don't have pictures for these two, so it'll just remain faceless. But we have pictures for the rest of the people. If I select one of these, then I can see the items. Got a chart. This is a Telerik chart that shows expenses by category. And then I can either approve this or decline it. If I approve this, the expense report has been approved. You may want to use the share charm to send a note to the employee letting them know. So to do that, I go and get my share. When I ask for the share, what Windows does is it queries the system to find all of the apps that have registered themselves as being able to be shared, as being targets for sharing, and particularly for the type of data I'm sharing. And there's two of them on the system right now, QuickNote and Mail. So if I pop this up in QuickNote, notice that QuickNote is going to receive details of the expense report action and the fact that this expense report number for this amount has been approved by me. Okay, and then I could then share this with QuickNote. Or what I could do is mail this. So I'm actually going to mail this to myself. And this expense report has been approved. Then I can, of course, add additional text to it, and then go off and mail it. Now, it's important to understand that the expense report app is not controlling the mail app. This isn't the world of automation where we fire up an instance of Outlook and then programmatically talk to the object model and make Outlook do things. Remember, apps are running in isolation. They don't get to talk to each other. They certainly don't get to start each other and control each other. What happens is when I bring up the share charm, Windows is providing a list of apps that can be shared with, that an app can share with. So QuickNote and Mail have registered with Windows as being share targets. And then when I click on QuickNote, what Windows does is it turns to the expense report app and says, give me some data. The expense report app gives Windows data. Windows says, thank you, turns around to QuickNote and says, here's some data, do with it what you will. The QuickNote app has decided that it will display it like this. The Mail app will display it like this. Maybe this app is sharing the image as well as more data. The app that's receiving it gets to decide what to do with it. So a good example of that, just to drive that point home, if we go into the Chicago Tribune app, for example. And let's do a search. What is in the news these days. I sure wish that touch worked. But what I can do is a keyboard shortcut. Windows C calls up the charm. So I'm going to do a search inside here for TechEd. Let's see if the Tribune has been writing about TechEd. I sure hope they have. Okay. Come on. Well, let's see if the LA Times has been writing about tech ed. This is no doubt a network issue, more so than the apps. Oh, there we go. I don't see anything about tech ed. All right, fine, let's look on Internet Explorer. Here we go. But I don't know if Internet Explorer can share. So anyway, we'll go back to the LA Times and we'll pretend that we were looking. I meant to look for irrigation tech, which is an ad. Oh, come on now. All right, fine. Beware of tech neck. Okay, this is important. Ooh, caused by flexing my neck for long periods of time while I hunch over to text to work on my mobile device. Never happens to me. So if I now say, let's share this, notice that there are additional apps that can share this type of information. So I'll go to Quick Note and notice that I just get the text. But if I go to Mail, do I get more? I'm hoping to get this image. There we go. At least I'll get some kind of image and the link. So the point is that the app that's receiving gets to decide what to do with the information. The app that's sharing passes a bunch of information to Windows. Windows passes that information to the app that's receiving, and that app can decide what to do with it. Okay, so going back to our expense report app, when I share, I may share the picture of the employee and additional information. I may even share the chart, an image of the chart. The apps I share with may or may not be able to, may or may not choose to handle those images. Okay? All right, so let's take a quick look at how you would build such an app. So I'm going to go into my empty version of the app. It says startup project, and of course when I run this, nothing appears because I haven't wired it up yet. Notice that it displays my name and image. It's actually getting this from Windows. So if we go into the main page, to the code for the main page, let's bump up the font. I go to the quick launch, type font, and it brings me immediately to the font window and tools options. That's a new feature in Visual Studio 2012, the quick launch, one of my favorite features in the product. And what I'm looking for is the code that grabs my picture. It's probably in the view model. Oh, no, it isn't. It's in the middle here in this authenticated year. Where is it? I'll find it. It is in the view model?
I think it was in a collapsed region in the view model.
Oh, okay, there it is. Here it is, right here. Thanks. So I'm going to create a new instance of this authenticated user. Then I'm going to get user information, which is in windows.system.getDisplayNameAsync, which is going to get my display name, which is Robert Green. And then I'm going to get my account picture as a small image. I'm going to read that asynchronously, create a new bitmap from that, and then set the image property of this authenticated user to that. And that's why when I run the app, it shows my username and picture. Now, I don't know that you'd necessarily display that, but it's good to be able to get that information. Okay, so the data is sitting in a service, and this service is in this expense web project, and it is a garden variety WCF service, as we all know and love. There it is. And so I can come back into my expense app, add a service reference to that, same way I have in the past. I'm going to call this services because that's what the app is expecting. And now I add this service reference to my MetroStyle app. Okay? So now what I'm going to do is go into my view model, which at the moment, when it calls this load reports, is returning nothing. So I'm going to comment that out and uncomment the code that actually goes and gets the data. So I'm going to, that's the comment that needs to be commented. Okay. So I'm going to call that expense service client, the proxy class for my service, and then I'm going to call get expense reports asynchronously. And of course, notice that there is no get expense report or get expense reports method. There is a get expense reports async method. So the default is to return these asynchronously. And in order to do that, I need to await. And in order to do that, I mark the method as async. Okay. Then I'm going to create a new observable collection of expense report groups, and I'm going to just loop through the reports that come back and group them based on status. And then all reports is equal to reports, report groups is equal to report groups, and that's what is bound in my main page XAML. I have a collection view source based on report groups. So as you can see, this looks like pretty standard XAML because it is. I'm going to display the information in the grid view, and now when I run this, just by calling the data and knowing what I'm expecting, bringing this back, now I have this, again, this Metro style app, this Windows 8 app that adheres to the guidelines. No Chrome, it's all content before Chrome. I'm using space and typography to delineate things. It's pretty clear that if I want to see this report, I would click on it and then bring the information down and display it. Okay. Now the approve and the decline are in an app bar. So let's go into the detail page. And I have an app bar at the bottom, which in this example has been set to sticky, is sticky and is open, so it automatically shows up. If I could actually set these to false, and now when I run the app, or just remove those entirely, which would make them false, and now the app bar doesn't come up, it only comes up when I ask for it, either by swiping up or right-clicking. So you can decide whether the approve and the reject should always be visible or whether or not it's just an action. I'm kind of leaning these days towards making it an action. Remember, the user can very easily get to it. It's just a simple right click, or if you're holding a tablet, you're holding the tablet, it's very easy to swipe up or swipe from the side. Very easy to swipe up and get that app bar. Okay, so that's an application that is all about read-only. Let's take a look at a different version of an expense report system that supports both. So let me just run this quickly and then we'll walk through it. So when I come into the expense report system, and this app is designed to mimic our internal expense reporting system. Our MS Expense today is a website, and it works perfectly fine. It does what it's supposed to do. When I have expense reports to file, I go to the website, it shows me my unreconciled charges, and it's pretty straightforward to create an expense report. But one thing the app does not do is give me a lot of help. It doesn't help me in terms of being prescriptive. It's very reactive. And secondly, it only works if I can access the website. And as a perfectly fine website, but you know, it's not necessarily fast and fluid and easy to use. So what I've done here is I've created a Windows 8 version of this app, and as I was designing it, I decided that what we could do is we could actually be more proactive. So I come in and I see that I have unreconciled charges. I see that I have $1,292 worth of unreconciled charges. I see what the date range is, and they're categorized new, old, late to map to company policy. Company policy is that after you're supposed to expense all charges within 30 days. After 20 days, you start getting the nag email that you have unreconciled charges. So new is something that's 20 days old, right? So that's brand new. You're not even going to be nagged about it yet. Old is anything between 20 and, is that right? Or maybe new is under 30 days old. Yeah, new has got to be under 30 days old. Old is between 30 and 44 days. Because at 45 days, Amex reserves the right to start charging you, right? So anything that's late is bold, and I've got a red exclamation mark showing me that I've got this charge that's within policy, this charge that's not within policy, and this charge that is late. Then I see unsubmitted reports. I can start a report and save it. So I see that I have a couple of those. Then I see the reports that I've sent on to be approved. I've submitted these, but that they haven't been approved or rejected by my manager yet. And when I was deciding what information to put here, I decided to distinguish whether or not money's owed to me or whether or not the money is just owed to Amex. So for this Tech Ed Europe travel or skills enhancement where I put the charge on my Amex bill, when I submit my expense report, I'm done. There's nothing left for me to do. It's no longer up to me to pay Amex. It is now up to my manager to approve this so that Microsoft will then pay Amex. I'm done. So for these, I know that they're pending approval, but I'm not owed any money. I may even decide at some point not even to show these because, you know, it's not my problem anymore. But the Tech Ed flights, I am owed money on this because 240 of this expense report are things that I put on my Visa or paid in cash or whatever. That's money owed to me, so I'm going to display in red there that this money is owed to me. And it's in red. The rule I built into this was after 3 days, it should be in red because I think our policy is that managers are supposed to approve expense reports in something like 3 to 7 days. Okay, so I come in and I immediately, I'm following the same principles as I talked about with my phone and checking email. I come into this app and it's telling me things. It tells me what I need to know. What I've also done on this app is I've turned on live tiles. So this app is, the tile for this app is telling me information that I have 3 unreconciled charges for $1,292. If I was a manager, the tile for this app might also tell me you have a number of expense reports waiting approval. This app also, you know, the tile might tell the manager you've got 3 expense reports that where money is owed to the employee waiting for approval in case the manager feels that that's more important. Right? So I can use the live tiles to display information as well as on the main screen itself. Okay. Notice that this is clean. It's content over Chrome. You come in, you see the information, and if I don't need to do anything else, then I can just leave. If I want to create a report from these unreconciled charges, I just need to click anywhere in here. Then I come into the report, and I see the unreconciled charges. Now, admittedly, I need to do some design work here. I should at least make maybe the top line's a different color, or maybe I use alternating background colors here. This is a little bit flat. I recognize that. So I need to do some design there. I've got space between these, but I need to do a little bit more in terms of color to distinguish these. I can enter the purpose of the report. So this will be, let's call it more Tech Ed travel to distinguish between my other Tech Ed travel. The app knows who my manager is, knows my cost center because it's looked it up either in a database or if I'm on the corporate network, it's calling an internal web service that uses Active Directory to look up my manager. So here I'm not on the corporate network, so this is just looking it up in the database. Okay, now if I can select one or more of these, I can also call up the app bar, and here are the actions I can take. They're in the app bar, easily available, but not necessarily on the canvas. Now, when I first created this application, I had add charge and new charge right here, and I had save and submit report right here. Because as a developer, my initial thought was, it's useless to show me the unreconciled charges if I can't do anything with them. And in all likelihood, the reason I came in here was not just to gaze lovingly at my unreconciled charges and think about what a wonderful time I had flying to Orlando through Atlanta, being delayed for an hour in Atlanta, getting to Orlando in a thunderstorm, getting back to my hotel and realizing that my luggage was soaking wet and all of my clothing in it was also wet. It's not that I come into the expense report to relive the glory days of travel, right? I come into the expense report in all likelihood to create an expense report, and I'm going to, in all likelihood, want to add these charges. So my initial thought was put the buttons on the screen. But that is actually a bit of a violation of the Metro design principles, because Metro is designed to be fast and fluid and clean. And I actually went back and forth on this. I worked with actually a design firm on this. They're named Macadamian. They're in Canada. I worked with them on this app, and they eventually convinced me that the Metro way to do this is put all these buttons in the app bar, easily accessible, but out of the way. And I've, at this point, come to believe that that's actually the best way to do it. So I can select all of these and add them to the expense report. I can select one at a time. If I select one, I see the details. I should be able to set the category, but in this beta version of this, that appears to be broken at the moment. I can add notes. I can also select one of these and remove it from the expense report. I can save the report. I can submit it. Or I can decide that I just don't want to do anything at all with this. When I click X, I get a pop-up to either save or discard. Okay. I can click here and come in and view saved reports. So this saved report has an item that's already in it. I can also go and grab the other unreconciled charges and add that to this report. Or I could just take this report as is, continue to work on it and save it or submit it. So let's submit this one. Okay, so this report's been submitted, and notice that it comes out of this category and goes into this category. Okay, and again, if I want to see an app that's already been submitted, I come in here. I now have a list of all of the reports I've submitted. I can view each of them, and there's nothing in the app bar because there's nothing to do. I've already sent these. What I do want to do, and I haven't gotten around to adding it yet, is add a share capability, because I might want to ping my manager on this expense report, or potentially even all of them, and gently remind my manager to approve the expense report. So I do want to add the share capability. Just haven't got around. Oh, wait. Yes, I did. I don't even remember what I put into this app. I put this in last night. So let's share. Okay, if I go to Quick Note, I did. I did share this. Okay, please review this expense report. I can share it as a note, or I can email it. And again, I'll email it to myself. This is very late. Please attend at your earliest convenience. Thanks. And I'll go and email this. Okay, so now I've pinged my manager about this, and I can move on. Now, through the magic of hard coding, let's pop over and pretend we're my manager. So here are the expense reports waiting for approval. So we'll come down to dinner with Citrix. And again, I'm looking at all of the expense reports that need to be approved, and I can approve or reject them. What I could also do for this is my manager comes in and looks at this and says, you need to list who you had dinner with, names and titles. Okay, so my manager replies to me with some additional instructions. Okay, now let's assume that later on, that's fine, it's approved. And now it disappears from his list, and if I go back to being me, it's disappeared from my pending approval list. So this is a pretty straightforward expense report application. Let's look at some of the code. We'll just do a quick tour of what's in this app. I'm using two services. The expense service is a WCF service that's talking to SQL Server. It's currently on this laptop. In real life, of course, it would be on a server somewhere else. It's talking to SQL Server for this sample application. In real life, it could be talking to Dynamics or wherever you're storing your expense data. It's fine with the app. The app's just calling a service. This PeopleStore service is an internal to Microsoft WCF. It's actually an ASMX web service that's using Active Directory to go find out who my manager is and whatnot. That's certainly something that you might have internally. So here's just a couple garden variety services. I'm using MVVM, so I have all of my view models for expense items, reports, and charges, and then I have just really three XAML pages, the main page, the page where you view an individual expense report, the page where you view multiple expense reports, okay? And then I have some logos, and I've got a couple helper classes, and if we look at some of this code, all right, if we move up and look at the code to close the report. Here's the code to add that menu that shows save or discard. These menu commands are, this pop-up menu is in windows.ui.popups. It's in that namespace. I just add the two commands, add the delegates in there, okay, and then this code here determines where that menu shows up on the screen. Here's the code to do sharing in the onData requested. So this args request is a request to Windows to share information. I set the title to the employee name and the purpose, the description to please review this expense report, and then I set the data to this string I build with the report number and each of the items. And at this point, request.data.setText is the point where this app has sent data to Windows to turn around and give to anything that's going to do sharing. Handful of lines of code to do that. A lot of the rest of this is code for making things appear and disappear. Nothing specifically specific to Windows. I mean, if you look at this code and I ask you, what kind of app is this? Well, when you see it's windows.ui.popups.messagedialog, that tells you it's a Windows 8 app. But otherwise, you would say this is just a fairly garden variety XAML application that looks like many other XAML applications. So here's my app bar. So there are some new things in Windows 8. But you're seeing that a lot of my skills translate. Okay? I'm sorry? Is there a date picker? Sadly, no. So if I create a new charge, I don't have a date picker in XAML at the moment. Is there a plan to have a toolkit? Yes, there's a plan to supply. Actually, Tim Heuer on his blog was talking about a toolkit that he and a couple other people are working on, similar to the Silverlight toolkit. So yeah, we would expect additional stuff to be coming out. So keep an eye out for that. you know, we're in release preview now. Final version will be relatively soon, so I would think in the relatively near future we'd get additional controls. And if you're interested in helping us write them, let me know. Okay, so I do want to talk just a little bit about deployment. And I talked about this fully in the talk yesterday, so I'll just give a very high-level overview. Now, how do we get this app out to users? We might decide to put this app in the store, but because it's talking to internal services and whatnot, we probably wouldn't. If this app literally just stored everything locally, and then you could email expense reports to your manager, that's the kind of app I might put in the store. In this case, we're not going to put it in the store. We want to get it out to users. So we're going to use a process that we officially call IT direct distribution, but what we also call side loading. Okay. So to do that, you need to sign the application with a trusted certificate, and then you need to turn on computers for side loading. If your computer is running Windows 8 Enterprise and is domain joined, it's automatically turned on for side loading. If you're running Windows 8 Professional or Windows RT, or you're not domain joined, then you need to get a secondary product key. There will be a process for doing that. We haven't talked about all the details or mechanics of that yet, but there will be a process for doing that. And at that point, you can sideload. And you can sideload through PowerShell. You can also sideload through System Center 2012 Configuration Manager. In the upcoming SP1 coming out later this year, you'll be able to push these apps out to x86 machines. You'll also be able to create this thing called a self-service portal, which is basically a place where you put apps for people to go and get. So something like an expense report app would be optional. We could tell people, if you want this Windows 8 expense report app, go to the self-service portal and then install it from there. Okay. Now in Visual Studio, what I can do is I can go to Project, Store, Create App Package, and build the package that would be used for installing this. First question is, do you want to build a package to upload to the Windows Store? I'm just going to say no. You're still right, because I didn't. Okay. So, as I was saying, thank you. I can go to Project, Store, Create App Package. First question is, am I building a package that's going to go to the store? In this case, I'll say no, since we're using it internally. I can build configurations to a particular package. Notice that the default is neutral, meaning this app will run the same on x86, x64, and ARM devices. That's the default. If I have specific versions of this, then I'll build a different app package for each. So if I literally have an ARM version which is different than the x86 or 64 package, then I'll build different packages. But for here, I'll just select neutral, and I'll click create. And then the app package is saved to this folder here. This is version 4 of this. This appx file right here is what I need to deploy this application. I can also, at this point, launch the Windows App Certification Kit, certify this app. We highly recommend you do that. I ran this yesterday and it fails, so it's not quite ready to be distributed. So now let's go look at this appx. This is what I need to install this, and we provide a PowerShell script to do that. And the key command in here is, if I can find it, is add-appx-package. But what I'm going to do is just prove this works. I'm going to uninstall this. And then I'm going to come back here and run the PowerShell script. I'm going to run the, there we go, run the PowerShell script. And my developer package was successfully installed. I come back here, and there it is. And because I have not rebooted my computer, it puts it in the same place. Ordinarily, apps you add go over here to the right, but it caches where this was, so it winds up there. So you can do that through PowerShell. You can push it out through group policy. You can push it out through Configuration Manager, and that's how you get this app out here. Now, so just in closing, to get back to the point of when would you build a Metro-style app, I will maintain that this app is now way easier to use than our web-based expense reporting system. So my manager picks up his tablet, he goes to have lunch, he's standing in line waiting for his sandwich to be ready or whatever, and he goes to the start page, and he's going to be surfing the web or, you know, seeing who's on Facebook. He happens to come over here to the business apps, and he sees that he has three expense reports that are late. He goes, oh, that's right, I need to do that. He taps, he comes in, he looks at this, he goes, oh, yeah, that's right. He taps, he's holding this, he swipes up, he selects all, he approves them all, he looks at them, of course, or maybe he's already looked at them. He looks at them each, explores them in great detail, and then approves them all. After he's approved them all, which usually is working. Oh, the app's hung. Okay. Anyway, he approves them all in the time it took him to remember to do that and then order his sandwich. So if you think about this app, the goal of this app is to manage the company's money. And this app now makes it more likely that the money will be managed in a timely manner because that was just easy. Opens the app, swipes around, clicks a few things, presses a few buttons, looks buttons. He can share and send information back to me. He can mail me. So here's that email I got, right? So when I talked about the reasons you would build a Metro-style app, one of the ones I said is increased productivity. And I think if you build the app well and you build it to be a Metro-style app, then they are fast and fluid and much easier to use and therefore more likely to be used. And that's the point. So, we're a couple minutes over, but we're pretty much done. Related content, there's a very good talk. I think it's already happened. So if you weren't there, go see it. On creating line of business Metro style apps in XAML using Blend and Visual Studio. We'll show you a lot of design techniques. My talk yesterday on deployment, I went into this in a lot more detail. And you can come visit me on my Visual Studio Toolbox show on Channel 9 where I talk about Visual Studio development, and I will talk about Windows 8 development and show this app as well at some point. And this app is going to be released publicly, so check out on Twitter or email me if you want a copy of it. Thanks for coming. Fill out your evals. Have a great rest of the show.